Up next, Out Loud with John McCaldwell, part of the Gingrich 360 Network.
It has just been confirmed that the President of the United States, Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden, has on numerous occasions used the N-word. I am not joking. I am not kidding. The President of the United States of America's son, Hunter Biden, has used the N-word casually numerous times. A word that has the ugliest history in our country. A word that slave masters used while they were beating slaves to death. A word that slave masters used when they lynched people, hung them from a tree, is one that casually comes out of the mouth of the President of the United States' son, Hunter Biden. What's even more interesting is the fact that his father has used it in Congress. Meanwhile, we're led to believe that Joe Biden is supposed to be the uniter of this country. He's supposed to quash all the race issues we have and bring us together, especially after what happened with George Floyd. I don't believe one bit of it. I do not believe that Joe Biden's son just recently started using it. I believe that he's been using it, and I believe that he probably heard it from his father to begin with. When I look at the policies in which Joe Biden has provided to this country, things that have become law, his stance on segregation, racial jungles, as he said, he didn't want his kids growing up in a racial jungle. When I think about his stance with the 94 crime bill, creating it, imprisoning hundreds of thousands of African Americans, impacting millions of families impacted. I am not surprised that Joe Biden's son would get caught using this ugly language. But my question is this. I don't expect anything to change with Joe Biden. I don't expect anything to change with Joe Biden's son. But will African Americans, black voters, view Joe Biden's son and him differently? If we were to find out that Joe Biden uses the word frequently and there was evidence provided, would they view him differently? Or will they continue to support his administration? That's the question that everyone should be asking right now, because when Trump said things that were racially insensitive, and he has said things that were racially insensitive, folks were up in arms, and in some cases, rightfully so. This should never, ever, ever be acceptable. And the fact that we may not even see any outrage from the media, those on the left, tells the whole story. That when it comes to racial reconciliation, for so many, it's a talking point. It's a cold word. Not to actually get anything changed in this country, but to use it as a farce to get more black people voting for Democrats. And this is only Gianno Caldwell's opinion. Black lives don't matter to Democrats, black votes do. And seeing things like this coming from the Biden family as a clear and unacceptable example of it. Welcome back to Out Loud with Gianno Caldwell. Well, folks, you just heard my monologue on Hunter Biden, and you can tell that I'm quite fired up. I'm pissed off, to be honest with you. I'm just extraordinarily disappointed with what I see as media malpractice for not covering a story that deserves attention. And the President of the United States' son, especially, who the president has called the smartest person he knows and someone he takes advice from on policy issues as well, as I can imagine. But I am honored to have a discussion with a man that really needs no introduction. You know him as a Super Bowl champion. You also know him as a congressman. And he just actually really recently became a congressman. His name is Congressman Burgess Owens. And I'm telling you, folks, he's a rock star, superstar right out of Utah. And I am so honored to have him here. And I'm honored to call him a friend and a new mentor to me. So I want to welcome Congressman Burgess Owen. Thank you for joining Out Loud with Gianno Caldwell.
Thank you, my friend. So good talking with you. And I'm looking forward to these topics we're going to be going through the next few minutes.
Absolutely. And last time I saw you, we had some really good conversation. We had lunch in Washington, D.C.
And thank you for accepting my invitation to join the show. So, as you know, I opened up the show talking about the Hunter Biden story. I'm sure you've read about it, and I know that you've tweeted about it as well. The president's son used the N-word repeatedly in several texts in conversation with his white lawyer. Some of these texts were also lewd and just plain bizarre. Before getting into the media angle of the story, what was your personal reaction when you heard about it, especially as a black man who was raised in the South during Jim Crow?
Well, I think the response that all of us, anyone who understands the environment we're in today and sensitive to it, it's obviously upsetting, but it's not surprising. And I'll tell you why. And this goes, I think, more to the crickets we're hearing from the media. I think that's really what we need to look at. As we talk about things like systemic racism, let's really peel back this a little bit. I grew up in the Deep South, and at 16 years old, I kind of recognized that there are two types of racists. One is the one that's in your face. Of course, being down South, that we dealt with them all the time. The good thing about the one in your face, you know how to prepare yourself. You know not to trust. You know to be ready to fight when you have to. But the one that's the most dangerous one is the one that smiles in your face, gives you a big hug, and does everything to and just pulls you in real close, tells you how much they love you, and then at the very end, make sure you know that you're inferior and that they are superior. That's the worst kind, because the trust factor is what allows you to believe that they have your best interest in mind. We're seeing a media now that is nothing but full of racists. I should say this too: racists and black elitists. We have the NAACP, we have the Black Caucus. There's silence, of course, on this, because their end game is not so much to point out these people that are not supporting our race or doing those things that help our race move forward. Is all about agenda of power, and we're seeing that as we speak. So, I just want to add one little thing to kind of point this out. We have last week there was a big report that came out about the NFL. I don't know how many of you guys have heard this one, but NFL was paying black players less in compensation for brain injuries than white players. And the reason they did that, because they call it race norm, they come up with an algorithm in which black people are less intelligent, so therefore they get the same injury, we get paid less than they do. Now, I don't understand where we're going with this. This is the kind of stuff that I grew up in. It's the kind of stuff I came into the NFL back in 1973 with, when you actually have no leadership positions, quarterbacks, centers, middle linebackers. These all were white leadership positions. We're now doing the same thing in 2021 when NFL, in which the intelligence of the black race is baked in that we are less so. So the broader picture is, why are we not talking about Hunter? Why are we not talking about the NFL? Why are we not talking about all the things that we end up finding on the far left that becomes very obvious? 2020, when all these black businesses were being burned down in every urban city and all these black people being killed, there is something that we have to understand, that there is systemic racism that's always on the other side. It's always on the party that looks down on our race, that does not expect good things from us, that it's okay if we have high crime, high illiteracy, high unemployment. That never seems to be the issue, because it's always the white man's problem. And so what I'm hoping that your audience will see, it's not just about Hunter. It's about the entire process of the message we're getting from the far left. And if we understand that and recognize that they're just not our friends, and I'm going to tell you, my white American friends out there, we're all of us in the same place when it comes down to the far left. When you're dealing with elitists, it is a equal opportunity provider. It doesn't matter who you are, what color you are. Elitists love power, and they'll use anybody, anything to get there. So we just have to be aware of that and understand that's what the problem is. So in terms of Hunter, he's got some big problems. So does our president. It's become very obvious that there's a consistency here. And not only are we going to continue to find out more about this fella, but we're going to find a consistent process in which we'll never get the truth when we need to hear it, so we can make the decisions we need to make.
You know, it was interesting to me because you mentioned a media angle, and you mentioned CBC and NAACP, CNN, New York Times. We haven't heard anything. Washington Post. We haven't heard anything. Just a handful of outlets really picked up this story. And what's so disgusting to me is the media has been all over race-based stories. They've written stories about a 15-year-old girl, I believe it was, that used the N-word, and I think she had an application for college or something other that was rejected because of the story that have come out. They've talked about the N-word about non-political figures. If Don Jr., everyone knows, if it was any of the Trump kids that used it, we would have wall-to-wall coverage. Donald Trump said in a campaign rally, he said, look, my African-American, you're a powerful person, my African-American. And, you know, to paraphrase, that's exactly what he said, my African-American over there. Wall-to-wall coverage. Hunter Biden, nothing. And what pisses me off even more, and I'm going to tell you, Congressman, can I call you Doc? Because that's what I've been calling
you. Yes,
Doc.
Please do.
Doc, I'm going to tell you, what pisses me off even more is whenever there was a race story that came out about Trump, or any Republican, I had people that I know call me, text me, you got to say something about this, you got to speak out about this, you got to da 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 da. You know what those people are now? Silent. They don't have no speaking out. I look on their social media pages, no comments. I've called some of them and they said, well, what relevance does this really have? He's not the president. Well, you've talked about other members of the Republican Party that wasn't the president or elected who have said things. Now I see what it's been. Race is, and racism isn't an issue to be solved. It's an issue to benefit from for those, many of those on the left. And I don't want to generalize everyone because there are some people who are really fighting for justice. I get that. But a lot of them, the majority, from what I can see, the vocal majority, that's what I'll say, the vocal majority are all about benefiting from racism to point at the other side versus solving it or calling it out wherever it lies. And I think it's a problem for our community, for the black community. It's a problem because now Democrats realize, because you won't get upset, you won't talk about it, you won't be vocal about it. They see, really, we don't need to do anything to get your vote but to call the other side racist, and we got you. What do you make of this double standard?
Well, first of all, we shouldn't be surprised. What we have to do, and this is really what it comes down to, I have to understand who it is that we're working with or working against, or who it is that that's trying to undermine the fabric of who we are. See, the fabric of America is one in which we literally, every generation, become better looking at each other from inside out versus outside in. The fabric is our Judeo-Christian values, which says no matter what faith you worship, you're welcome here, but because you worship, have a faith in God, then we do our best to be blessed by Him by treating other people right. Now, if you take that out of the equation, which is what the hard left has done. You have to understand what we're dealing with here. We're dealing with people who do not believe in God, do not believe in the family unit, and also capitalism, a free market, is taboo. The idea of having a self-sufficiency, having the empowerment of ownership, that is so against the other side that we're dealing with. So if we begin with that premise, that we're dealing with an ideology, and that ideology is almost like a spiritual, a religion of its own. It's the question you have to ask. And this is, I just heard this the other day. The question is, do you believe in God? And if you believe in God, and as long as you do, and you know that you're not Him, then we have something we can talk about. We have a side of this process here that truly does want to undermine who we are. And the most powerful thing that we the people do is we talk. We look for harmony. We look for ways that we can find common interests. We look at a football game, a basketball, in which we can forget our division, our differences, our politics, and come together and root for our team and be friends. So those things, those common bonds that makes our country what it is, God, family, country, entertainment or sports, which we seem to feel as a team. That's what's made us great. And that's why whenever you have things like a 9/11 or Pearl Harbor, you find America's coming together like nothing else in the world. We come together, we bond, and boy, there's nothing more powerful than that. The left wants to destroy that. So don't look for logic. And I guess that's my point. Don't look for logic when we have conversations about the hard left. There's no shame, number one. When there's no God, there's no shame. They'll do whatever they feel they have to do to win, and they don't care who pays the price for them, as long as they're not paying the price. They'll use and abuse anyone and everything, and so that's what we're seeing now. They're going to, they look so hard to find ways to make white people feel guilty and black people feel angry. And we have to get past this and recognize who we are. I'll say this. One of the great things about this 2020, as tough as it was, and many of us lost good friends, jobs will become an issue. You have so many children now that have lost a whole year. It was an attack on our system. But that has allowed us also to pull back the curtains and start having conversations. It's going to be really important for us. So we're now waking up. We're now realizing that our freedoms are so vulnerable. We just can't take for granted. When all of a sudden wake up, can't go to school, can't go to church, can't open your business, then we can have a conversation and bring us together. So keep that in mind, and we continue to have these issues with race, and race is going to be pushed up. Keep that in mind. It's illogical, and let's move forward and do something else.
Absolutely. Talk about another conversation. And before we move on, I just want to remind our audience of things that Republicans have experienced when it comes to people making comments, whether they be insensitive or just racist. I want to remind folks that Steve King, who was a Republican congressman from Iowa in January 2019, he said the following line in an interview with the New York Times: white nationalists, white supremacists, Western civilization. How did that language become offensive? Republicans across the board immediately rebuked him, removed King from his committee assignments, and basically made him a pariah. And then King lost re-election in 2020. And just this year, GOP leaders immediately and forcefully condemned Congressman Marjorie Taylor Greene for comparing COVID-related rules to the Holocaust. But the Democrats have done nothing to condemn, let alone punish, Congressman Omar for routinely making anti-Semitic comments. She's still on the House Foreign Affairs Committee despite spreading misinformation and demonizing our closest ally, Israel. And obviously, they've been silent on President Biden's son using the N-word. It seems that racism and bigotry are exposed to the light. Republicans condemn it right away and Democrats don't. We're talking to Congressman Burgess Owens from the great state of Utah. We got so much more with the congressman right after this break. Why did you decide to run for Congress? You're a superhero to so many people. You talk about you winning. You worked in the NFL, very successful there, a champion there. You've obviously written books, done quite well in that arena as well. And you came into a space where people were really going to begin to hate you. There's a shift that takes place when you're a beloved figure. You think about somebody like Ben Carson, who was really loved in the black community. I remember going up in elementary school and seeing his picture with Oprah Winfrey and many others. Your picture may actually have been up there as well as great black folks. But as soon as you saw him switch, not even switch gears, who really talked about his faith, who talked about the fact that he was a Republican, he got hated. So why would you do something like that? Like, you had a great life before. Why join public service?
Well, because I had a vision, I've had a mission, and I've had that mission since I was, since I was very young. I was very, very fortunate to have been raised at a time when my community really believed in, and their mission is being their children living better than they did. Their mission was the idea that they were going to command respect just by winning and showing that they can compete in any arena. We can spend time talking about that, but if you just go back to the Martin Luther King marches, notice that they're wearing white shirts, dark ties, sometimes dress shoes, because they wanted to give the impression of a very professional, committed, disciplined, principled, articulate race, because at that time, we were looked at as beneath the white race, very inferior. So when I came to the NFL, my mission, because I was raised in this community, and I talked to my dad all the time, who was a great mentor, and trying to find out ways to help young people, is I had the same dream. I had the dream of coming out of the NFL, building a business, and some kind of way helping my race, the kids and young people, to have the same. Well, I did. But then when I end up, finally getting to where I had a not-for-profit working with at-risk kids, I realized if we don't change policies, that our kids don't have a chance. So that's what I end up doing I had that moment. I realized that in order to make the difference with these at-risk kids, boys and girls coming out of the juvenile system, giving them a second chance. And I realized if I didn't do something with policies, that it would not change. So I had a friend of mine who asked me to seriously consider it, and I finally did. And I realized that this might be an opportunity to do so. So, and to the point of being disliked, I think if you're going to make a difference in life, that's the price. Anytime that you're going to make this country great, make your family great, stand up for your community, stand up for what's right, there are going to people come after you. That is the way it works. It's good and it's evil. And the other side doesn't like to see good moving forward. So I'll say this, Big G, I'll say the same thing for you, man. I know for you. It could be so much easier just to go out there and live your life and do things that are kind of not too controversial, and you'll still succeed. But you would not feel good about yourself because you know there's something more in there that you got to do. So I'm hoping that Americans across our country, and this is every color and background, let's remember, and if you've not been taught your history, find a way to learn the great history we have and be part moving forward of making sure our country comes together. We're at a remarkable place now. And those of us who stand strong, history's gonna look back and say, this was the generation that did what they had to do. They were the kids that were running the beaches in World War II. They were the firemen that ran into the buildings of 9/11. And that's kind of what we have to look at ourselves. This is our moment to save our nation, but we can only do that by standing up and fighting against the bullies and the cowards, because that's what the left are. They're bullies and cowards, and if you let them run shot over you, they will take advantage of you. They will never, ever stop. They will just find another way to command you do what they want to do, and we need to push back on that.
Absolutely, and that's a good segue. I want to shift topics with you and discuss a story that's been in the news. As you know, President Biden President Kamala Harris, as Joe Biden sometimes call her, President Biden put Vice President Kamala Harris in charge of handling the border. And Harris just went on her first foreign trip as VP to Mexico and Guatemala. By all accounts, the trip was a disaster. According to reports, allies of Biden and even some people close to Harris think it went horribly. And she was totally unprepared for basic questions. How do you assess Kamala Harris' job as VP so far, especially in the handling of the border crisis? But I want to point a clarification in terms of her being unprepared for basic questions. She did an interview with NBC, and she couldn't explain why she hasn't been to the actual border to see what's going on and see the crisis that's taking place. And she said, well, I haven't been to Europe either. But what does that have to do with anything? So she fumbled the ball on the interview. She really lost out before her peers in other countries, because I think it was the president of Guatemala who said that the crisis at the border is the fault of Joe Biden. So, you know, they're telling on him. How do you assess her job thus far?
They're lost in space. They're showing that they're lightweights, and it's sad to see this. It really is, for a country as strong as our country is, that is in a position of always being the leaders. And we've had presidents who have come and gone, some are good and bad, but none of the presidents and vice presidents have been clueless. And that's what we have right now. We see the first 6 months of this year, you're talking about turning around a society to where more and more people in misery. And we see inflation. For young people like yourself, inflation has always been so small, so minute, so slow that you don't quite get it until maybe 5-10 years later. We're seeing this within 6 months. We're seeing a border in which it's truly open. it is. I just came back from the Darien Gap last week. And that's the place now between Panama and Colombia. It's where people coming from all around the world, 60 countries are coming through this gap, and they're coming all from all around the world. It's a very dangerous gap, by the way. It's the most dangerous jungle in the world, and people are dying, going in and coming out, and they're wounded, they're dying. It is amazing. They're being robbed. The women are being abused. But they're coming through because they get this big welcome sign, and they feel they can live the American dream because we have a president who has no clue about the misery and the consequences of his words. So this is going to continue because at the end of the day, the far left has a mission. The mission is to push so many people into our country that we don't recognize who we are. So many people who come here do not know our language, do not know our culture, have no idea what the American dream, what America, loving our country even. They come here because they can get some, they get a good life. We have a government that's going to give them everything. And that's not what's built our country. Our country is built on pioneers, on risk takers, on people building a bigger dream and so proud to be Americans that they would change their name and speak only English because they want to be assimilated into the American way. That's not what we're seeing happening here because the left would do anything they can to get power and to change us from the country that believes in God, country, family, respect for women and authority. That's who we are, by the way. They want to change that to something that's exactly the opposite. We hate, we disrespect, we don't think a family is what it's supposed to be. We have no God in our lives because they are God. They want to be in control of everything. That's what they want, and we've seen it before. Cuba, Nazi Germany, China, any place that we've had totalitarianism is what they're trying to get to. And they're not going to get there because American people are waking up. And I just have so much faith in who we are and who's backing us up. And we're going to make, you know, we're going to get control of this country and then go in the right direction for sure.
And getting the control of this country encompasses, I think, all voices at the table, especially when you think about congressional organizations like the Congressional Black Caucus, which is a group that's supposed to be nonpartisan, is mostly made up of Democrats. Since the 1970s, only a few Republicans have been a part of it. You're obviously one a hand. What maybe is like three Republicans now in Congress? You, Byron Donalds, and then Tim Scott.
Yes,
right?
Is that right?
Right. So it's only three of y'all now. Recently, Congressman Byron Donalds, he was looking to get into the Congressional Black Caucus, and he's been denied. I want to play this clip and get your response to it, but I want to set it up for the audience here. This clip is Congressman Donalds on CNN, and they just play a collage of statements made by Trump. They get his response and asking, why does he want to join the Black Caucus after having supported Donald Trump? Take a listen to his response.
First of all, whatever the president said in the past has nothing to do with this discussion at all. I think what's
you've defended
please don't cut me off. I have not cut you off in this interview. Please do not do that to me. Thank you. As a black man in America, I'm allowed to have my own thoughts on who I choose to support and who I choose not to support. I think that it's important whether you're talking about the Congressional Black Caucus or the Florida State Legislative Black Caucus or the National Caucus of State Black Legislators, organizations I have been a part of in the past. My support of President Trump has been consistent, but at the same time, I've had the ability to advocate for issues, ideas, proposals, and funding that have helped the black community in my state. You're talking to somebody who my first 3 years in college was at Florida A&M and HBCU. So whether my support for President Trump, whether it's for or against, is irrelevant. That has nothing to do with this discussion. This is whether the ideology of somebody who is conservative is welcome in the Congressional Black Caucus. It's really that simple. And so to bring up President Trump and try to make this about him does not matter. It's irrelevant. It has nothing to do with the situation at hand.
What did you think of what Congressman Donalds just had to say about that?
Well, I think that he was spot on. Here's what I want everybody to remember when it comes down to the hard left. We talked about earlier who the true racists are in our country. You see, they expect black people to think exactly the same way because we're black. They think with our skin. And if we don't say the right thing, they're upset, they're frustrated, and they wonder, what in the world are we thinking about? We must be crazy. Well, Byron, by the way, is one of the sharpest young men I've had a chance to meet. I've been so proud to serve with him. He will bring to any organization a perspective, an intelligence, a way of finding solutions. But what we're seeing here is a black caucus that does not care at all about solutions. Understand that in every single community that is going through misery, black community, who's in charge of that community? Where is the biggest illiteracy, the biggest crime, the destruction of the family, the anger that takes people to the streets? It's always in the same people. It's the same folks, the same end areas, and the same places that have been run by the Congressional Black Caucus. I give Byron a lot of credit because I had not myself want to be part of the organization because I don't see that we have a lot in common. My goal is to make sure that every community, no matter what color is surviving, moving forward, particularly because I'm a Black American. I want Black Americans to feel and know that the American dream is here for them too. And I'm realizing that every single place that this caucus oversees, there's misery. So I think there's a couple of things there. You see that, and here the condescending attitude of these white liberals is amazing. Here's a congressman, and she can't help herself by disrespecting him the way in the tone that she gives to talk to this guy, to talk to Byron. Why? Because in their mind, this is not a true Black American, and he does not deserve their respect because he's not acting like Black people should be acting. So there's a couple things that unfold in this. Keep this in mind whenever you hear these people talk to conservative Black people. And there's the other side of it. And I say this is one of the worst things that I think has happened to us. When I grew up in my community, that was a remarkably successful community in the 60s. Let me just say this real quickly. Led our country in the growth of middle class, men matriculated from college, men committed to marriage over 7%, and the percentage of entrepreneurs. That was the community I grew up in. And what turned us upside down was not white supremacy. It was Black elitists. Elitists that cared more about their power, their positions, their fame. They care about their community. And they just like a matadors. They opened the gates and let these folks come in and destroy our community, and they're trying to do the same thing today. So I want my friends out there to recognize we should not turn against each other. We might not agree on everything, but we have the same end game, which is to make sure our kids have a remarkable future and that the opportunities for life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness for everyone. No matter what side of the aisle we're on, we agree on that. Recognize there are people that do not want that to happen, and they are our true enemy. So let's make sure we're talking, my friends, and agreeing to disagree. We do that, and believe me, we get a lot further, and then we'll understand again who our true enemy is, and those are the people who want to destroy everything we believe in.
Before we move on, let's take a quick break. And I want to ask you about sports. You obviously played in the NFL for 10 years. You're a Super Bowl champion. Sports are traditionally patriotic and all about hard work and a meritocracy. But now professional sports leagues are becoming increasingly woke. They're promoting Black Lives Matter. They're talking about laws that are being proposed. What do you make of the NBA, NFL, and other sports leagues becoming increasingly political and left-wing?
I think the arrogance, they should pay a price. They're arrogant. There was a time when woke companies cared about all of their customers more than they cared about jumping into this political arena. What we're seeing now is the results of having a terrible educational system that teaches our young people to grow up and be socialists. And they're now in charge. So they don't care about the 74 million other people that did not vote for Biden. They care about their agenda. They care about, again, the whole left agenda, which many of us are against. So I had a football game in 2 years, and I won't. I'm a person who believes in being principled. Let's give some things up. And when it comes down to the free market, we give things up by not paying for their services. And at some point, they will get it. So I think that's important to keep in mind. We right now, as I mentioned before, we're fighting for the heart and soul of our nation. We want a place in which our kids grow up looking at each other the way my kids were raised. It does not care about the color or the religion or the culture. You care more about the fact that there's somebody that you have the same basic beliefs in terms of content, helping people, accepting people who they are. Those are things we look for. and we cannot allow for our kids to grow up in an environment that's teaching them to hate other people based on their skin color. And I just want to make this one point. I grew up in that environment in which I never, when I was in high school, did not develop any white friends because we were getting through just that first integration period and just trying to get an idea who we were. And today, decades later, when I run into some of my colleagues from that era, we talk about how we're so sorry we missed that opportunity to spend time together, to date, to hang out, to have fun, because we were just trying to get through that era. We were the generation that sacrificed a lot of friendships so we can get to the point now where none of that stuff should matter. Let's not be the people that look back and our kids say, I sure wish I had not gone through that era where I was taught to hate people, because now I regret it. We cannot let our children say that one day. So let's not let that happen.
Absolutely. And I want to get in your, if you tell people about your book and if you have any legislation coming up that folks at home should be aware about, we will love to hear it.
First of all, I had a couple books. The last one was Why I Stand, from Freedom to Feel Killing Freedoms of Socialism. My first one was Liberalism. Or How to Turn Good Men into Whiners, Winnies, and Wimps. Great history about my race, about our great country. But the most important thing right now is that those are listening. Let's make sure we learn our great history. That's what it comes down to. Now, right now, I'm on the judiciary and the ranking. I'm a ranking member for education, labor, pre-K through 12. And we're putting together legislation to make sure education is an option for everyone, that choice should be out there big time. So just keep in mind, keep that up as we move forward. I would say this, the goal is to make sure that the Republican Party is in charge in 2022. If we allow that to happen, we're going to find policies that are going to allow us, our kids, to have options for businesses to start running again. Some black businesses out there can get back on track to become part of the American dream. And we're going to have rule of law, where you build a business, you raise your family, and you walk out your house and you feel safe. At the end of the day, that's what it comes down to. We need to get back to basics. We do that, and America just wins when we do that to make that point for sure.
Thank you, Congressman, for spending time with me here on Out Loud with Gianno Caldwell. And we want to be sure to support your book. I think that you're an outstanding standard bearer for what folks can aspire to. So we appreciate your service and sacrifice. A Super Bowl champ that went 10 years. That's a long time. But thank you so much for all that you do for our country.
Well, thank you. And let me just say this. I have been so impressed. I know that our future is in good hands. We have strong, solid conservatives like yourself that stand for the right and you can articulate yourself. And this is a team effort. It's all we do. We all do our part. So I'm thankful that I'm in the position I am, but I'm also thankful for friends like you that give us a voice, a platform to have these kind of conversations. And for people across the board, doesn't matter what our party is to have common sense conversations where we can come together and realize we need to really work together, harmonize again to keep our country going strong. So thank you, Big G. All right. Thank
you. Absolutely. And I think that was an incredible point that you made, having a platform to speak up, because not everything goes right within the party. We'll certainly call out if things aren't going in the right direction. And absolutely, that's the point. We can have conversation, dialogue, and it's not going to be like on the other side where they just let stories like the Hunter Biden N-word story just go to the wayside because he's a Democrat. We're going to call it out if necessary, and we're going to keep moving forward to ensure our party has earned the respect of all Americans. So I appreciate that, and thank you so much for your time, Congressman Burgess Owens.
All the best.
I want to thank Congressman Burgess Owens for a great interview. If you're enjoying the show, please leave us a review and rate us with 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. If you have any questions for me, please email me at outloudatgingrich360.com and I'll try to answer them in our future episodes. And please sign up for my monthly newsletter at gingrich360.com/outloud. You can also find me on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Parler at Gianno Caldwell. If you're interested in learning more about my story, please pick up a copy of my best-selling book titled Taken for Granted: How Conservatism Can Win Back the Americans That Liberalism Failed. Special thanks to our producer, John Cassio, researcher Aaron Klingman, and executive producers Debbie Myers and speaker Newt Gingrich, all part of the Gingrich 360 Network.